from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Trump's tariffs, Bill Barr's contempt, and late-term abortions in New York versus homicides in New York. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Well, earlier this week, President Trump announced new tariffs on China, and some are questioning the move. At least one expert on the region is in favor of the move. Gordon Chang is the author of The Coming Collapse of China and has briefed the National Intelligence Council, the CIA, the State Department, and the Pentagon. And he joins FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about this move by the White House.
Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much, Tony.
It really looks like President Trump, we talked about this last time you were on, they were beginning these trade negotiations once again. It really looks like President Trump is playing tough, and he is bringing China to the table, it appears.
Well, he certainly is, and he's doing the right thing. His tweet on Sunday, he said that he was going to raise tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods from 10 to 25% and impose 25% tariffs on another $325 billion of Chinese goods. That is going to bring the Chinese to the point where they realize they've got to talk to us in good faith. So far, the tariffs have started the negotiations, but China's been delaying a lot, as we've just found, and not talking to us with the seriousness of purpose that we need. So we can be a lot more optimistic now that President Trump has taken a much tougher posture.
So whose economy is more fragile?
Well, China certainly is. First of all, we're growing at a 3.2% clip. That's the first quarter of this year. China claimed 6.4% growth for the same quarter, but is probably growing 1% or 2%, if that. The big issue, though, Tony, is that in order to get whatever growth it has, China has been incurring debt 5.5 times faster than it's been producing nominal gross domestic product. That's up from 1.5 times from about a year ago. This is spectacular. It is scary. The Chinese certainly know it. And one other statistic that shows the relationship between the two countries. Last year, China's merchandise trade surplus with the U.S. accounted for 129.6%, 129.6% of its overall merchandise surplus. That shows extraordinary dependence on the U.S. market.
Well, when we look at, let's put for a moment, just put the trade issue aside, the economic relationship, but when we look where China is going on human rights, on religious freedom, what they're doing to the Uyghur Muslims, how they're using facial recognition to track their citizens, the social score that they're using. I mean, in many ways, by continuing to give them an advantage over us in trade, we're facilitating them building this repressive regime.
Oh, you're certainly right. I mean, it's first of all, the surveillance state that China's putting together is total control. This is totalitarianism in China, not authoritarianism. But also, you know, we're helping fund China's military expansion. And we have, at the same time, senior Chinese military officers openly talking in public about attacks on the U.S. Navy. And in December, one of those military officers, a rear admiral, actually talked about sinking 2 aircraft carriers and killing 10,000 Americans. I don't think we should be trading with a country that is openly gloating and boasting and hoping to kill Americans.
What do Americans have at stake in this? I mean, you know, we get a lot of cheap products from China, and Americans more and more are consumers. What's at risk for the United States in this?
Our sovereignty, our freedom, our way of life, that's what's at risk. Yeah, yes, we can get, for instance, cheap goods, but we can get those goods from other countries. And by the way, Tony, we can bring some of this manufacturing, the most important part of manufacturing sector, we can bring it back into the U.S., which is already starting to happen. So for us, there's so many good things if we disengage from China to the maximum extent possible. And remember, China's stealing somewhere between $100 and $600 billion a year in U.S. intellectual property. I put it at, you know, a rough guess, $300 to $400 billion. Whatever it is, even at the low side, it is a grievous wound to America. We cannot allow that to continue.
Now, some of the trade experts that are monitoring this and some that are even involved in it are suggesting that China will never meet all the U.S. demands. Do you agree with that?
As long as the Communist Party rules, as long as Xi Jinping is there, that's certainly right. Xi Jinping believes in a state-dominated economy. The role for foreigners is basically to come, give money, surrender technology, and leave. And he doesn't really believe in the notion of comparative advantage, which underpins international commerce. So how can you have a trade agreement with a guy who doesn't believe in trade? This just, to me, is so counterintuitive, you know, in terms of trying to solve decades of failed trade agreements by signing up another one. So I believe that the best thing to do for us is to isolate ourselves, trade with our friends, don't trade with our enemies.
So has Xi Jinping met his match in Donald Trump?
I actually think so. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, Xi Jinping doesn't face elections, he's powerful, all the rest of it. But what we're seeing, though, is China being pushed around. And that is something that nobody has witnessed for about four decades. Because for four decades, we had this engagement policy, which was to try to bring China into the international system. And because of that, we were extraordinarily solicitous of them. And we put their interests sometimes ahead of ours. Not this president. This president believes that he's going to defend the American people because they elected him.
Mm. Gordon, always great to have you on. I always enjoy hearing your perspective on this, and we're going to be tracking this very, very closely. So I'm sure we'll maybe you'll want to touch base next week.
Thank you so much, Tony.
You can find out more about Gordon Chang when you visit TonyPerkins.com. You'll also find a link there to join us for the Values Voter Summit coming up in October in Washington, D.C. You'll join like-minded individuals as you hear from dozens of speakers talking about faith, family, and freedom. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That is frc.org/ABA laws.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Well, the drama over the Mueller report doesn't seem to want to end. When liberals didn't get the smoking gun they thought they'd find in the report, they decided to go after the guy who delivered the report, Attorney General William Barr. And on Wednesday, the House Judiciary Committee voted along party lines to proceed with contempt charges. Why? Because Barr won't violate the law and release the entire report, unredacted. Joining Tony to talk about the issue is Senator Josh Hawley, who serves on the Judiciary Committee, the Armed Services Committee, and the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be with you.
You know, I think a lot of people are wondering, where is this going to end? I mean, the report that was presented showed that there, in fact, the conclusions of the special counsel, no collusion. But that doesn't seem to satisfy the Democrats. Where does this political circus end?
You know, it ends, I guess, when the Democrats suffer at the ballot box, because it doesn't look like anything short of that is going to deter them. I mean, you're exactly right. The Mueller report is out there for everybody to read. It's 448 pages. It finds that there was no conspiracy, there was no coordination, there was no collusion, and there was no obstruction. And now Attorney General Barr has testified before multiple committees. We just had him in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, where I'm a member, last week for a lengthy, lengthy testimony laying all of this out. And that's the end of it. And it's time now that the Democrats moved on and we actually get to work with the business of the country. Like, for instance, getting prescription drug costs down. Like, for instance, getting disaster relief to people like in my state of Missouri who are literally underwater. Democrats aren't letting us do any of this because they want to keep talking about Bob Mueller.
Right. And in fact, I want to, you've got to measure, you're moving forward on the prescription drug prices. I think you're working on that issue. There's a lot of work to be done for the American people. But I want to dissect this for just a moment, because I don't want people to miss these claims that the Democrats are making. The reason that the Attorney General would not appear before the House committee is because the House committee wanted staff attorneys to basically do cross-examination. They wanted to ask the questions. The Attorney General is exerting that was inappropriate to have staff attorneys ask him questions or examine him. If the committee members wanted to do it, that was fine, but not staff attorneys.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you what this is all about, theatrics. I mean, the Democrats are desperately grasping at any straw to keep this story alive. But the truth is, I think the longer they talk about this, Tony, the more obvious it becomes that they don't really care about what the real needs in this country. I mean, they don't really care about getting wages up for the hardest working Americans. They don't really care about getting healthcare costs down. They don't really care about getting prescription drugs costs down, because they're not doing anything about any of those things. What they're doing is grandstanding and playing games, which is exactly what they've been doing with Bill Barr. And in this case, dragging the reputation of a good and honorable man through the mud, trying to destroy his reputation just because he's doing his job as Attorney General. And by the way, doing a very good job at that.
Let me ask you about the president's decision to claim executive privilege over the full report. Did he make the right move?
Well, I don't know that he has a lot of choice. I mean, given that the Democrats are going to cite him for a contempt, it's really pushed them towards this outcome. But there are provisions of the report that cannot be released as a matter of law. There's grand jury material in the report. I can say this as a lawyer myself and as a former prosecutor. You're not permitted as a prosecutor to release grand jury material. Bill Barr has testified under oath that there is a fair amount of that in the report that has been redacted. There's also, he told me, that there is, under oath, I mean, publicly, he testified that there's a fair amount of material that the intelligence community did not want released because it's sensitive to national security. So, I mean, these are things that have been redacted. But get this, the administration has allowed members of Congress to see the full report without redactions in a secure area. So it's not as if nobody can see this material. It's not as if it changes any of the outcome of the report. And this is why, Tony, again, it is all theater. It is all distraction. It's really the worst of Washington. I mean, it's just, it is silly nonsense that is keeping us from doing what we should be doing for the people of this country.
So, Senator, to be clear, the Attorney General, if he complied with the demands of the Democrats, he could be criminally liable.
Well, he cannot release grand jury material. So if that is indeed what they're asking for, if they're saying we want the full and totally unredacted report, we want it released to us and we want it made public, he just can't do that under the law. And it's all a distraction anyway, because they can go and see in private, in a classified setting, they can go and see the report.
But there's no cameras in there. There's no TV cameras in there.
Correct. Exactly. And there you put your finger on it. It's all about the theatrics. It's all about the game. And you know what? That's what people hate about Washington. It's just the game playing. I've only been here for not even 4 months, and the amount of game playing that goes on in this building, in this city, is just outrageous, and you're getting a heavy dose of it right now.
Yeah, we should make this into a board game, and we could make some money, huh?
I tell you, it's just extraordinary. But meanwhile, I mean, you have to laugh because otherwise you would cry, but it really is quite serious. Meanwhile, there are important things that are not getting done. I just came from a hearing on the crisis at the southern border. We have a humanitarian crisis with the children being smuggled across that border. We've got a drug crisis. Drugs are pouring into my home state of Missouri. Where are they coming from? Across the southern border, Congress is what are the Democrats talking about? Bob Mueller, rather than this crisis that is a serious threat to our national security as a nation. This is the kind of harm that this is causing. We've got to get focused on the real problems.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, my guest, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We've been talking about the Attorney General, the President, this afternoon exerting executive privilege over the full unredacted Mueller report. I want to shift gears because something that I actually we talked about when you were attorney general in Missouri, something that's long been a focus of yours, and now you've brought that to the Senate, thankfully, very glad. The focus on these big tech companies, the social media giants, that, you know, are picking winners and losers and beginning to censor individuals, especially conservatives, when they want to use the platform that they're holding out as essentially a virtual public square.
Yes, and it is, there's a disturbing pattern there by these social media giants, Facebook, Twitter, Google, social media platforms that they own. There's a disturbing pattern of censoring, as you say, conservatives and libertarians, of deplatforming them when they express views that the social giants disagree with. And here's the deal, Tony. The social giants get one of the reasons they got so big and that they got so rich is they get a special deal from the government. They get treated differently than newspapers or television stations or radio stations. They have their own deal where they don't have to be liable in the same way all those other media outlets are. In exchange for that, they're supposed to be neutral forums to allow for the free exchange of ideas, but they're not doing that. And here's my bottom line. If they're not going to allow there to be a free exchange of ideas, if they're going to act like the editorial page of the New York Times, then they ought to be treated like the editorial page of the New York Times and subject to the same laws that every other newspaper and publisher is.
Meaning that they have a responsibility over what is on their platform?
Well, meaning that if they're going to exercise editorial control, which is what they're doing now in a political way, right, like the New York Times editorial page does, if they're going to say, well, here's our view, and we're only going to allow columnists who have certain views, we're going to curate the views on our platform. This is what every editorial page in America does. If that's what Twitter's going to do and that's what Facebook's going to do, then they shouldn't be immune from liability. They shouldn't get the special rules that they're getting now as tech platforms. They should be treated like a traditional publisher. So I think we're coming to a time of reckoning where the social giants have to decide, are they going to be truly neutral platforms for people to express their views on? And we're talking, by the way, Tony, we're not talking about criminal views or violent views. Of course, those shouldn't be present.
Right.
We're talking about political views. Are they going to allow people to express differing political views, conservative views, or not? And if they're not, then I think it's time we rethought the special deal they get from government.
What would be the process by putting them in line with everybody else? If they're going to act like everybody else, treat them like everybody else. What's required?
Well, there's a section, a key law known as the Communications Decency Act, and there's a section of that law called Section 230 that comes up all the time in this context. And 230 is this special deal that companies get, and it says they get treated differently. And my view is we should revise 230 if companies, the social media companies, are going to continue to discriminate against conservatives on the basis of political speech. You know, I just want to underline, we're not talking about saying, oh, violent speech shouldn't be on our platform. What we're talking about is Twitter and Facebook saying, we don't like your views. We, you know, pro-life views, they get discriminated against. You know, pro-religious freedom views, they get discriminated against. That shouldn't happen.
Is that getting their attention, Senator?
You know, I certainly hope so, but we're going to continue to push forward and protect free speech for every American.
All right, Senator Josh Hawley, thanks so much for joining us and for fighting that fight for free speech. Extremely important. Extremely important.
Thank you, Tony.
You can learn more about Senator Hawley when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, I'd encourage you to download the Stand Firm app for your smartphone. It's an easy way to keep up with the topics you care about most. Again, that's at TonyPerkins.com.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Our next guest put together a side-by-side comparison of New York City's homicide stats for 2015 and the number of babies aborted at a gestational age of 21 weeks or later. There were 352 homicides compared to 1,485 abortions. Here to talk about his research is the editor-in-chief at CNSNews.com, Terry Jeffrey.
Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on.
But before we get into these numbers, and this is why I always like your articles, because you crunch the numbers and you show this in a way that is, it's indisputable. But before I do that, speaking of New York, yesterday the former speaker of the New York City Council, Christine Quinn, was on CNN, and I've got a clip of this, and I want to play this. She was on, I think, with Rick Santorum debating this late-term abortion issue. Here's what she had to say. Play the clip for us, Bobby.
When a woman gets pregnant, that is not a human being inside of her. It's part of her body. And this is about a woman having full agency and control of her body and making decisions about her body and what is part of her body with medical professionals.
Now, this, remind you, former speaker of the New York City Council. Now, I don't know if it's the hangnail or what it is, but she says it's not a baby, not a human being. When you hear that kind of stuff, Terry, it's not hard to figure out how they get to a point where they can advance infanticide.
Well, you know, to put it bluntly, Tony, that person is a scientific ignoramus. The fact of the matter is, from conception, whether you want to call the human person a fetus, an unborn child, whatever you want to call it, it is, in fact, a homo sapien. Its species is human. It is alive. It is a being. It is a human being. It's an indisputable scientific fact. But it is an interesting thing, you know, because where this comes from is in the Roe v. Wade decision. Harry Blackmun, who wrote the opinion, didn't contest that an unborn child was a human being. The question was whether it was a quote-unquote a person, because person is the word that is used in the 14th Amendment. And he wouldn't even rule out that all unborn babies were, in fact, persons. So the debate was around person. It never was around human beings. But a while back, one of our reporters went up to Capitol Hill and asked Nancy Pelosi, when they were talking about the heartbeat bill, whether or not an unborn child with a human heart and a human liver was a human being. And she would not answer that question. And our follow-up question was, what species is it if it's not a human being? And she couldn't answer that question. So this really gets down to the heart of the matter. They know, Tony, that they are killing a human being when they do an abortion, but they don't want to admit it. And that lady yesterday on CNN, quite frankly, was showing how idiotic their argument is.
But truth, I mean, truth does not in any, I mean, they're not tethered to the truth at all. And I mean, we see this even with the New York Times as you break down the numbers where they're saying, you know, going after the president who's put, and justifiably so, put a focus on these birthday abortions. Their claim is that abortions occurring after 21 weeks in the United States are rare. But you actually break down some numbers and say, all right, let's look at New York City and see how rare they are.
Exactly. And I use the same source the New York Times claimed it was using. You know, so they did not. What happened was, according to the New York Times, after the president gave a State of the Union, they said that abortions in the 21st week or later were, quote unquote, very rare. And they claimed that their source was the Centers for Disease Control's annual surveillance on abortion that they published last November. Well, if you look at that actual report, which is linked to my story, it says that there are 1,485 abortions in the 21st week or later of pregnancy in the city of New York alone. We don't know how many were in the state of New York because it wouldn't report its numbers to the CDC. But what I did was, obviously, 1,485, that number did not appear in the New York Times report. I compared it to the number of homicides that occurred in New York City in that same year, the latest year we have the abortions number, number four is 2015, it turned out there were 352 homicides. I don't think the New York Times would say that the 352 homicides that occurred in their city in 2015 were a rare number. There was almost one murder a day in New York City in 2015, but there were four times as many abortions. There were 4.1 babies aborted every day in New York City, if you assume that babies were aborted in all 365 days of the year. So if you kept it literally just to the regular work hours of each day of the year, every couple of hours, a baby that is 21 weeks or older is being aborted in New York City. And the New York Times calls that, quote unquote, very rare, because that's what President Trump pointed out.
Making very clear, this is not all abortions. These are just the abortions that I think 2.3% of the total amount of abortions, which are the late-term abortions. So as you say, 4-1. 4-1 in terms of abortions to homicides in New York City.
Yep.
While the abortions are described as very rare, I would love to see what the New York Times says about the homicides.
And these are late-term abortions, Penny. Yeah, these are abortions 21 weeks or later. And sometimes a baby, not always, but sometimes it's a baby is viable at 21 weeks. But each day they get older past 21 weeks, the chances that they can survive is greater. And in that abortion law that Andrew Cuomo signed, they allow abortion for any reason whatsoever up to the 24th week of pregnancy, and then all the way to the end of pregnancy, right to the moment of birth, as President Trump said, they'll allow an abortion for a health consideration, which means also literally anything. So in New York City, you can abort a baby for any reason. You can do it right at the moment of birth. And they did it to 1,485 babies past the 21st week in 2015.
In my book, that's not rare. In fact, I think most Americans would say that is anything but rare. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on. Thank you for an insightful piece. We'll encourage people to take a look at it.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234.